This is Travel with Rick Steves, and we're joined by Simon Griffith. And Simon is the producer of our public television series. Simon has been with me for every minute of my filming in Europe for the last 20 years. And he joins us now to just reminisce about the biggest project for us yet. It's a six-hour miniseries for public television called Rick Steves' Art of Europe. It's airing all over the United States. And I'm just so thankful for the partnership, the collaborative partnership I've got with my producer, Simon. And Simon, to do this show, during the pandemic, we went to Europe three times because, as you said, we drew from our archive of 20 years of incredible museums and galleries and magical art stuff. And then we had to go back to the main stops and film the on-cameras and all the missing pieces and so on. So in the last three trips, again, during the pandemic, and thank God we got through it just amazingly well, we went to Florence, Rome, Athens, London, Paris, Bruges, Madrid, and Vienna, in that order. And we had some great traveling there as we were on our mission. I think it was kind of obvious. The first shoot we did, Florence, Rome, and Athens, those were the main stops for our Renaissance, ancient Rome, and ancient Greece hours, right? What do you remember from Florence?
Well, Florence, you just know that you're going to the heart of the Renaissance, and everything's going to be beautiful. Everything's there. But my goodness, the Italian bureaucracy, it was extraordinary, and extraordinarily difficult to get through, even though they know that, yeah, you know, who you are and that you share the wonders of what they have in them in the Uffizi with the American public. It was still really, really tricky to get permission.
But we did, thank goodness, get permission for the Uffizi. And, you know, a lot of us tourists were frustrated because a museum is closed one day of the week. And if you come to Florence on Monday and you want to see the Uffizi, you're not going to see it because it's closed. Actually, it is open because it's quite busy with people paying, what do we pay per hour to be in the Uffizi?
Oh, 400,
500 bucks an hour or something like that, you know?
More than that,
so
yeah,
more than that. So if, you know, big shots who want to have their private entourage in a museum, you know, if you got the money, you can get in on the closed day. And TV crews are busy working, and the museum is busy spiffing things up, moving around paintings, you know, fixing things.
But we still have to, that makes it kind of tricky at times, too, because you have to shoot around. Sometimes there's a cleaner with the floor polisher, and somebody's moving a trash can. Or
yeah.
And sometimes there's nobody in the place, so you have to actually put a security guard there, and then maybe myself, I'd be in deep background, way in the background. Some people,
but we were all alone with the Botticellis. It was so beautiful. A big part of your work is access, permissions. And it feels like it's getting a little tougher these days, but it's really a critical thing. Has it changed in 20 years, the complexity of getting permission? Because if you don't have permission, you just can't do a good job.
Yeah. I mean, I think even back in the earlier days of production, a lot of the stuff, we might have even snuck shots. We were just going to go in kind of quietly and with the camera. But that's impossible now. You really have to have permission, and security is much tighter. And then there's a bureaucracy. There's just
different countries have different levels of bureaucracy. I mean, some countries you go, they want the exposure. They don't have the corruption and the cronyism and all that, and it's just really straightforward, you know?
Yeah. Some countries make it just roll out the carpet, and other countries just seem to just make it more difficult, which is one of the challenges. And for the art series, we needed to film in Athens, and we were just hitting bureaucratic brick walls there.
I remember we did have one frustrating thing with the Acropolis Museum. The curator there had so many restrictions for us to shoot there that we just said, we can't do it so hamstringed. So we ended up doing more of our shooting in London at the British Museum because they've got wonderful Greek statuary in London at the British Museum. And then you're dealing with the controversial Elgin marbles.
Yeah, which are now not called the Elgin marbles at all. They just call them the Parthenon marbles. They might even be taken out, just the Parthenon statues now.
Yeah, because the Elgin is just too fraught with well, the British looted and plundered it, basically, during part of their empire. And, you know, 150 years later, it's just bad vibes. So change the name.
Yep, change the name, but it was still the same beautiful art. And we got to film those extraordinary.
Gorgeous. Extraordinary. In London, and the Tate Britain and the Tate Modern were both very helpful in London, along with the National Gallery. Then we went out into the countryside, Stonehenge and Avebury, and we were there.
Of all the days, of 365 days of the year, you arrive at Avebury on the spring solstice. And
this is a festival of druids. They're up there doing their boogie and playing their drums.
Hippies and drums.
If we were doing a show on the west end of England, that would have been great. We'd go, great, spring solstice. But we're trying to get some peace and quiet to talk about the art. And we've got these guys with didgeridoos and drums all there to do their...
And then sometimes you can ask people, you know, it's like, would you mind just being quiet just for a few minutes while we... But they're in the moment. They're celebrating the solstice.
That's called negative serendipity.
You
got to work around that.
Or sometimes something might look great to the eye, but it might not look great to the camera. Like we were looking for some head of Goliath, and there's a couple of things. It's like, well, this is kind of gruesome. It's great as a piece of art, but it's not the shot that we need.
That's right. A self-portrait of Caravaggio, who happens to have his blood dripping down from his severed neck. That's a little distracting.
Yeah, we'll skip that one.
You know, we went to Paris, of course, and we had to go to the Louvre and the Orsay and so on. But one thing I really needed for the show was a glorious Gothic cathedral. And we've done a lot of Gothic cathedrals over the years, but I needed one Gothic cathedral that we could really make some points. And Amiens.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, talk about one cathedral coming through big time. I mean, this one glorious cathedral just north of Paris.
A-M-I-E-N-S, Amiens. No tourists go there, but this cathedral.
It's absolutely magnificent, both on the outside and the inside.
Oh, beautiful. It's like a set.
Gothic, yeah.
It's perfect. And there's no tourists there because nobody goes to Amiens. It was bombed in World War I, rebuilt. So today, it's an hour and a half away from Paris by easy trains. You've got lots of World War I memorials. You've got a real honest-to-goodness, workaday French town. And in the middle of it, you've got this massive, magnificent, sparkling Gothic cathedral.
Yeah, stunning.
Stunning is the word.
And really worked out well for us. So
yeah,
it's a large part of one of our shows.
And the other little side trip we made from Paris, which I'm so thankful for, it was a little town called Provins, P-R-O-V-I-N-S. It's just 45 minutes from Paris by train. And we were looking for a medieval town that would be a wonderful stage set. And Provins was just, I'd never heard of it before, and I'd never been there. It's a beautiful side trip from Paris. And then just at the very end of our production, we did a 12-day trip to Bruges in Belgium for the Northern Renaissance, to Madrid, because Madrid was so important because it's got the Prado and it's got the Reina Sofia with Picasso's Guernica. So we were very welcomed there. And then the finale was in Vienna. All of this was put together into our series, and it was a writing challenge. I'm very thankful for the work that you and I have been able to do together on that, and just such a blessing to have public broadcasting, to have a platform for this, because this is the kind of programming that would not see the light of day anywhere else on the dial. But in radio and on TV, public broadcasting respects the intellect of its audience, assumes an attention span, and brings us programming that is not driven by keeping the advertisers happy, but that is driven just by a passion for embracing the world and celebrating in a positive way in all of its diversity and all of its wonder.